money, money, money.
Money 105.5 presents Money 2.0.
Money 2.0.
Now, from Rogerson Business Services, certified business broker, Andrew Rogerson on Money 2.0.
Good morning and welcome to 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. I'm the host of the show, Andrew Rogerson. I have two guests for you this morning. My first guest is Nay Grant and my second guest is Mark Denning. Nay works for a mergers and acquisition company called Woodbridge International. I've known Nay for about 6 years or so now, and he specializes in largest deals. So my conversation with Nay this morning is about someone that wants to sell a business that has a minimum net income of over $1 million per year. So just so I'm clear, I'm not talking about a value of $1 million. I'm talking about a business that has net income after all sales and expenses of over $1 million per year. So Nay's involved in doing some pretty serious transactions. So I thought it would be interesting to talk to Nay about what he does. My second guest is Mark Denning, and Mark is the CEO of a company called Real-Time CFOs. His background is working as a CFO. He's been involved in different businesses. He's also written a book called Drive Your Business to Financial Success. So I thought it would be interesting to have a conversation with Mark about the work he's done as a CFO. Talk about his book, because his book's about helping people who own a business manage their cash flow. Mark just thinks that's a critical component to success for a small business owner. So I thought that was an interesting conversation to have with Mark. So he'll be with us at about 10:30 this morning. So if you're out and about driving and listening to the show and you're wondering what's been said and want to come back and listen to it, you're welcome to go to my website, www.rogersonbusinessservices.com. Each show's recorded. I put up each show at the end of the day or tomorrow morning, but the show's available to listen to at your leisure. So head to my website, www.rogersonbusinessservices.com, and hit the media tab. And there's a tab there that says 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. And you can download and listen to the show and the other shows I've been recording as well. So you're welcome to do that. So what's this show about? This show is about business owners who are in business and those who are thinking of becoming a business owner. We cover topics like selling a business, buying a business, or buying a franchise. And these topics can include legal issues, finance, tax, accounting, as well as sales and marketing. Or as I like to say, this show is where Wall Street meets Main Street. My name is Andrew Rogerson. I'm a certified business broker, the host of your show. I'm certified with the California Association of Business Brokers, and I'm also certified with the International Business Brokers Association. I'm the author of four books, Successfully Start Your Business, Successfully Buy Your Business, Successfully Buy Your Franchise, and then Successfully Sell Your Business. If you need more information, visit my website, www.rogersonbusinessservices.com, or give me a call, 916-570-2674. Each week I like to touch on an event or a charity event happening in the community because I think that's how the community gets stronger. If you've been watching what's happening with social media and youngsters committing suicide because they've been bullying, there's someone doing something about it. There's an event called Sticks, Stones, Tweets and Hashtags. And so the focus of the event is to talk about bullying and how parents can be more proactive in looking after their children. The event's this coming Saturday the 21st of September. It's from 8:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. And it's in Citrus Heights. It's at the Grand Oaks Shopping Centre. Goes from, as I said, 8:30 to 2 p.m. And it's free, no cost. There's a maximum of 250 guests. So they've got a five-guest speaker panel. So lots of good qualified people talking. And it's organised by the Sierra Sacramento Valley Medical Society Alliance, so people trying to help the community. If you want more information, it's www.ssvmsa.org. ssvmsa.org. So you're welcome to go to the website and get more information. A question I get often is, what's the bulk sale price when selling or buying a business? So I wrote a blog about it. It's on my website. You're welcome to go to my blog. And there's a blog there, what is bulk sales when selling or buying a business? And we'll give you some more information. So my first guest, as I mentioned to you, is a gentleman called Nay Grant. And as I said, I've known Nay for a few years, about 6 years or so. And he works for Woodbridge International. And hopefully Nay's on the phone there. Nay, you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can indeed, yeah. Thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you for having me.
No, great. So tell me a little bit about Nay Grant. What gets him out of bed each morning?
Well, as you know, selling companies means you have to do a little bit of everything. So one day I'm heads down in a spreadsheet. Another day I'm negotiating with an attorney. And another day I'm flying off to visit a client in Chico or Idaho or Oregon. And I've always been kind of a jack-of-all-trades kind of person, and this is the perfect job for that.
So I noticed you said you're off traveling to Oregon and different places, and the way you do that is to use your private pilot's license. Have I got that right?
That is right. In fact, I like to say my territory is as far as I can fly on one tank of gas, which happens to be most of the western states. I have a Cessna, and it does help to get around and visit clients.
Yep, no, that's great. So by education, you're an engineer, but and you've got an engineer degree from UC Santa Barbara, and you also have an MBA from UC Davis. So what attracted you to the world of buying and selling a business?
Well, like a lot of us in this profession, I did it myself. I built a company. I used my MBA degree, and I used my technical degree, and I built a tech company. I sold that, and during that process, I got exposed to the art of the deal, you know, doing a deal. After that, I raised money, and I used my plane, and I bought companies. I raised money, and I went around the West Coast buying companies and just got exposed to the process of how you buy and sell companies. And I enjoyed it, and that's how I got into the work.
It is a unique work, what we do as a broker. There's so many elements to it. There's the obvious things of helping the seller, helping the buyer, otherwise a deal doesn't get done. But there's so many other layers to it with the illegal, with the accounting, with the tax, with the finance, with the escrow process and going through that, with the due diligence. It's not a simple process, and it is what it is, but it does, if you have a mind for detail, which is what you do, obviously, with your engineering degree and your MBA skills, it's very absorbing and very addictive.
It is, and it's a challenge sometimes, and really, you work on a little bit smaller businesses. I work on a little larger one, but the main process is the same, and you can spend about the same amount of time and the same amount of effort. It's a challenge.
Yep. Now that's an intriguing thing. You're exactly right. The deal size may vary, but and each deal has its own unique personality, unique ways of doing things. But most of the deals require you going through the same process. Otherwise, just things don't get done. So. As we like to say, it is what it is. So you're currently working for Woodbridge International. You've been there for about the last 5 years. Have I got that right?
Yeah. 5 years now.
Okay. And what you're doing? You mentioned some of the things you're doing. You built a tech company, and you sold that, and then you've traveled around putting finance and more deals and things together. You have a company called Compass Point Capital. Is that still up and running, or have you?
Yeah, but Woodbridge. Woodbridge focuses on companies with $1 million or more in earnings. And Compass Point Capital is still a smaller M&A company that I have that does a little bit smaller companies. But
right.
Most of my effort is through Woodbridge. Okay. And that $1 million mark, that's kind of what's called the middle market.
And it's called the middle market because you're dealing with companies that too small to be in the smaller market, and the larger companies like your public corporations and things, they're in the real high levels of the market. And so in the middle market, that's where you're doing a deal, because hopefully you're trying to work with a larger buyer that would like to take out this business, and generally a competitor. Have I got that right?
Yeah, a good way to look at a small business is that the owner is getting a salary, and it could be a great salary. It could be a really big salary, but it's basically a salary. When you get up towards $1 million in earnings, that's real cash flow, and now that's something that an investor would be interested in. You know, that's cash coming off the business after you've paid management. So then you get into the world of private equity and larger strategic companies that are interested in you. Private equity, and most people have heard the term, but it's really a private investment group. It's a group of investors that are purely interested in the financial aspects of owning a business. They want to take it and say, okay, it's making $1 million a year. I can grow it for 5 years. I can sell it for X amount, and then I can get so much return on investment. And right about $1 million a year in earnings, that's when these private equity groups become active and interested in buying your company.
Now I'm going to jump in. I'm going to take a break because I've got to get you away. You've got a conference call at 10:30, so I've got no spare time with you. So let's take a break. My guest this morning is Nay Grant from Woodbridge International. We're back from break. I've got some questions for Nay about Little Market and what he's doing there.
Money 2.0 is sponsored by Rogerson Business Services.
Call Money 1055 at 866-576-1055. And get your questions answered in real time, right now, on Money 2.0.
Family, quality, sustainability. Three words that tell the Twisted Roots winery philosophy. And when you savor one of the award-winning wines, you'll taste the fruits of three generations. Wine tasters from all over prefer their 2009 Cabernet Sauvignon, winner of a gold medal and Best of Lodi Appellation in the 2012 California State Fair Wine Competition and the 2010 Cabernet Sauvignon Gold Medal winner at the 2013 San Francisco Chronicles Wine Competition. Twisted Roots Wine in four delicious varietals, Chardonnay, Cabernet Sauvignon, Petit Syrah, and Old Vine Zinfandel. Taste their fine wines at Estate Crush in Lodi or at Lion's Head Art Gallery in Carmel Valley. Club Twisted members get two-bottle shipments a year for $65 plus tax. Twisted Roots wines are available at Total Wines in Folsom, Roseville, and Sacramento, or from their website, twistedrootsvineyard.com. Twisted Roots Wines. Family. Quality. Sustainability.
Are you a business owner or entrepreneur at heart? I am too. I'm Andrew Rogerson, a local business broker and host of Money 2.0. Listen live Tuesdays at 10 on Money 105.5 FM. Let's talk about how you can successfully run your business.
Tune in to Money 2.0 with Andrew Rogerson, certified business broker and author of four books, Successfully Start Your Business, Buy Your Business, Buy Your Franchise, and Successfully Sell Your Business. Hear Andrew Rogerson on Money 2.0 live, 10 a.m. Tuesdays, right here on Money 105.5 FM.
Money experts, every morning at 10 on Money 2.0. Now, back to the host, Andrew Rogerson.
For listening to 105.5 FM and Money 2.0, this is Andrew Rogerson, and my guest this morning is Nay Grant. And Nay works for Woodbridge International, and his focus is on larger transactions, companies that have at least $1 million a year in net income. Nay, we were talking about the middle market before we went to break, and so there's a difference between the transaction. If you're working in a middle market transaction, it's different to a small business deal that I'm doing for Main Street people. At a simple level, what are some of those differences?
Is in how you market the company, and that's probably the biggest difference. And it's kind of interesting because at the Main Street level, really, you only need to market to the local area.
Right.
And interestingly enough, in really large companies, you don't need to market that heavily because there's only a few companies that can, for example, buy Microsoft or
right.
some large company.
Yep.
But in the middle market, it's all about the marketing, and that's really what we spend a lot of time on. We build a prospectus, a book. We do a video, and then we market worldwide. And that's what it takes in the middle market because you don't know who at a particular time is interested in buying such a business.
Right.
And we market in Japan. We have people in China. We have people in Europe. We have people in Brazil. And a good example is a company that I'm working on right now. We've got 80 buyers from all over the world. We've got England and Brazil involved, that 80 buyers that are interested in the company, and out of those, 8 bids for the company, 1 from Ireland. So it really takes that marketing in order to get the interest to know that you get the best price.
So that's amazing. You've got 80 expressions of interest from buyers, and of those 80, it came down to 8 companies deciding to make a bid. And has the seller chosen a buyer yet? You mentioned the company from Ireland. Is there a deal in the works now, or is it still being worked through?
Yeah, what happens now? We're right in the process where we have presented all the offers to the seller.
Yep.
In this case, it's a high end machine shop, CNC Machining. They make mainly aerospace parts, and we've chosen three out of the eight to meet with, and then we have meetings. These are pretty long involved meetings, and then after that, then the negotiations really start to drive towards a letter of intent.
Yep.
And then you choose the one person that you want to go forward with.
Wow. Okay. So that's an involved process. So just to get back to the marketing, so the marketing, which I understand is a critical component, and it must be intriguing putting together a marketing package to touch buyers right around the world. I mean, when I'm selling a business here in the Sacramento market, I'm expecting to get phone calls from buyers in the U.S. Occasionally get calls or emails and requests of interest from companies that are for somebody that's overseas, but I know their ability to do something is very restricted because they don't have a visa or they don't live here in the country, and their opportunity to come and look at the company is just they've got travel costs, and so it's just kind of impractical for me to expect somebody from an overseas country to buy a local business. But in your mindset, that's just part of your market, and the world is a potential buyer.
Yeah, no, that's right. Although I work mainly locally, I did do a deal in Brazil, wow. And that company ended up bought by a company based in California, but owned by a private equity group in England. So yeah, it's truly a
international global
yes. market.
Yeah, exactly. Intriguing. So if I was lucky enough to own a business that had a net income of $1 million or more a year, what's the best way to maximize the price? It's kind of the process you've gone through. So rather than the typical process where a buyer makes an inquiry and if the buyer keeps going, they end up making an offer. But in your process, I think you're doing the reverse. You're actually encouraging buyers to bid against each other, and you won't accept an offer until you've fully explored the buyer and their skill set to buy the business. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We drive the process. So instead of, and this happens all the time to people, where somebody will approach you. Private equity groups do cold calling all the time, trying to get good deals.
Right.
And you might go down the road with one buyer and then another buyer and waste a lot of time.
Yes.
What we do is drive the process so that we create this competitive bidding environment. We have the bids due at a certain date. We have questions due at a certain date. We drive these meetings, and then we drive the LOI. So it's all built around competition, that competitive bidding.
And for a deal to truly happen, I think one of the critical things is obviously having a buyer that's strong enough to get the finance required to put a deal together. So that's going to be part of your responsibility leading the transaction to make sure the buyer really has the finance ability. Or do you try and get the finance organized before you start meeting with buyers?
No, it's very much like on the lower end where you have to vet buyers to make sure the money's there.
Right,
I do the same thing. You got to make sure that they're capable. Sometimes it's easy. It's a much larger company.
Right.
And you know they have the money. Sometimes it's a private equity group that you know they have a well-known fund. They have a $100 million fund. They bought companies before.
Right,
you know they're real. Sometimes you have a private equity fund that's just a couple of guys. And they don't actually have any money at all.
Right.
And you know the story, and you need to make sure that you know who they are.
And that's part of your role, is that you help the seller by getting rid of those buyers that say they have an interest and say they have an ability, but when you boil it all down, they really don't, and they can just end up wasting so much time and just disrupting the whole process.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And, yeah, you only want to meet with the serious buyers that have the ability to buy.
Yep. Do you, when I'm doing a transaction, I like to have finance organized because, and it's something that not many brokers do, but from my perspective, I'm selling a Main Street business. If I can have the business pre-approved for an SBA loan, it just helps the process, because if I find a qualified buyer with a down payment, which the SBA requires, and I have the SBA lender organized, ready to go, it just helps keep things moving. So is finding finance part of your world?
It can be. We have a database. Instead of SBA, we use mezzanine financing,
right.
and asset-based lending. So we do have a list, but there isn't really that pre-approval notion that you have that's so helpful in the smaller business market.
And when you say mezzanine finance, what does that mean? Just put a definition on that for us.
That is, you know, it's a higher risk debt, and it usually comes with warrants. But it just means that there's asset based lending, which everybody knows. You know, you use your equipment as collateralization. For mez, for short, is cash flow. It's based on your cash flow, which is a little higher risk. You pay a little higher interest rate. And generally, there's an equity kicker or a warrant involved. So it's financing that costs you a little more than the normal bank financing, basically.
Yep. Right. Do you try and focus on particular industries, or again, if I'm in doing a Main Street transaction, for me, the most important thing I want is a qualified seller with a qualified business that I've looked at their tax returns to make sure that the business is performing as the seller is showing. And once I have that level of comfort, then I'm comfortable going to market and trying to find some buyers. Do you? But I do focus on medical transactions to a certain extent. But do you try and focus on particular industries?
No, pretty much the same as what you said, Andrew. If it's important for a company and important, I think, for listeners to know that if you're thinking about selling in the next couple of years, it's good to get together with an advisor to make sure that there isn't anything that causes you any risk factors that might be a problem, because there's things that you can do ahead of time to take care of those. And that's really the qualification. It's not that I focus on anything. It's that if a company has, you know, really messed up financials or has some other risk factors, you know, we may not want to take that on.
Right. And that was actually one of my questions. You know, you're like me, that my time is my most important commodity, so I have to spend it and spend it wisely. I'm sure you have a rigorous process to decide whether you're a good fit for a client or not, and you have a process to weed out the clients you can't help. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I go out and meet with every client, and then we go through the financials, and you know, we'll do a pretty thorough analysis before we ever engage with somebody to make sure that everybody's on the same page. You know, we know what their earnings are, and that we kind of flesh out some of those risk factors before we take an engagement.
Yep. Well, I'm concerned with your time. I know you've got a conference call at 10:30, so I'm not giving you much time to finish the call here. Now, thanks for spending your time with me this morning. If there's people listening and they want more information, they can go to the Woodbridge International website, which I've written down here as www.woodbridgegrp.com. So it's a little bit confusing because it's not Woodbridge International, it's Woodbridge Group, and there's an abbreviation in group. So let me try and get that again. So it's www.woodbridgegrp.com. That's the website address for Woodbridge International. Now, do you have a phone number you can give out for people or not?
Yeah, sure. My phone number is 530-647-8526.
All right. Well, again, I want to thank you for being on the call. We're going to go for break now. And, Nay, thanks for being a guest this morning. And you're listening to 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. We'll be back shortly.
Money 2.0 is sponsored by Rogerson Business Services.
Call Money 105.5 at 866-576-1055 and get your questions answered in real time right now on Money 2.0.
U.S. stocks rise on Microsoft buyback. From Bloomberg World Headquarters in New York, I'm Donna Wilson. U.S. stocks rose, sending the S&P 500 index toward a record high, as Microsoft's plan to buy back $40 billion in stock fueled optimism that more companies will return cash to shareholders. Microsoft paced a rally that sent technology shares to the biggest gain among 10 industries in the S&P 500 after also announcing plans to boost its dividend by 22%. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 54 points to 15,548. S&P 500 Index up 0.4% to 1704. And the Nasdaq gained 0.6% to 3740. Well, the Federal Open Market Committee meets today and tomorrow, when members are forecast to cut monthly bond buying by $10 billion to $75 billion a month, according to a Bloomberg survey of economists. That's a Bloomberg Market Minute.
control. We can see socks for miles.
I'm sorry, Lunar One. Did you say socks?
Miles and miles of socks.
Like we wear on our feet.
Roger, control. The socks appear to cover the entire dark side of the moon.
In pairs?
No, just random socks and giant, fierce mountains of dryer lint.
The search is over! Yeah!
There are some things you can search for and never ever find, but when it comes to finding a local job, SacramentoHelpWanted.com has made the search super easy and free.
Do you see any purple argyle?
Search by keywords or phrases to find hundreds of jobs in accounting, HR, recruiting, retail, or healthcare or IT, and post your resume in minutes.
Lots of tube socks and a holy cow, there is a river of knee-highs.
I guess the search is over. Check us out. We're SacramentoHelpWanted.com. Long name, amazing results.
Are you sure you don't see any purple argyles?
Hi, everybody. This is Eric Ilofsky-McKay, host of Real Life Lending, every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. on Money 105.5. I know that you're all tired of mortgage company ads telling you how low their rates are. Well, I'm not going to quote a rate that very few folks will qualify for. What I will do is take the time to find the best loan program for you and your family. Whether your FICO is 800 or 600, I'll take the time to provide you real options based on your current financial situation. Let my 20-plus years of experience work for you. Essex Mortgage has been a direct lender for over 26 years, and the best part is that we make all lending decisions in-house because we are the bank. If you're looking to refinance or purchase using a conventional FHA or VA loan, give me a call. Work directly with me, Eric McKay at Essex Mortgage at 916-806-0606. That's 916-806-0606. And don't forget to call in with your questions to Real Life Lending every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. on Money 105.5.
Essex Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMLS 70377. DRE 996013. DOC 607-3343. Eric McKay, NMLS 288343.
Money experts every morning at 10 on Money 2.0. Now, back to the host, Andrew Rogerson.
Welcome back, and thank you for listening to 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. I'm the host of the show, Andrew Rogerson, and I have my second guest with me this morning. He's just driven in from Lincoln to be here in the studio, and his name is Mark Denning. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Mark and I haven't met before, but that doesn't stop us having a conversation about business. So I thought it'd be fun to have Mark here because he's a CEO of his own company, but his background is actually being a CFO. So, Mark, just give us a 30,000-foot level overview of your role as a CFO. What's that entail?
Well, essentially, I've been a CPA for 30 years and decided to move more into the active business, working with CEOs and really working with them to improve profit, cash flow, and enterprise value, just drive that value of their business. And essentially, it's more exciting for me. It's more creative for me to really be involved in the act of business as opposed to really being the traditional accountant, historian, and resenting the fact that I was a cost center. I really try to look at myself as a person that makes a difference in a business. And I really try to sell my services based on delivering a return on investment to my clients.
So that was one of my questions. You've been a CFO, that's been your career, and you're a CPA, so your background and training is numbers and those sorts of things. But a company that can afford to have a CFO, I'm sure, is so much stronger because you have a focus that is the critical part of the business. I mean, I guess everything's critical, but you know, having a good CFO on your team, it's got to add great value to a business.
Yeah, and it's really about the financial management. And what I've found over the years in Sacramento is, you know, there's so many small to medium-sized businesses. There's many industries. Certainly, I've been involved in many, from ag, manufacturing, service, mining. You know, the list is unending. And there's really many situations dealing with startups, financing high growth, managing bankruptcy, and workouts. It's really just being able to, you know, be involved across the gamut of the type of market that we're in here in Sacramento.
So you've been a CFO, and I'm sure the role changes. You're still doing a CFO role, but the role would change a little bit depending on the industry you're in. Have I got that right?
Well, it's honestly, to some extent, no, because really the way I look at business is every business to me is a formula. It has variables and constraints, and when you're trying to solve for those variables and constraints, you're really trying to get to the underlying business drivers of that business and then really trying to model those so that you can better predict the future and make decisions based on what you see in the future as far as proactive. So, I've always, people always ask if it's important to focus on a particular industry. And in Sacramento, frankly, you just can't.
Right.
And you have to be more of a generalist and solve.
Yep. I'm currently doing a tax and accounting class at college. And so I'm understanding what you're saying, but I'm also aware that different industries have different tax benefits and different tax treatments. And it's incredibly confusing. So I get what you're saying, though, that at the heart of a strong business, the numbers have to make sense, and that's your role interpreting those numbers and bringing value back to the CEO to say, okay, here's the research, here's the analysis, here's where it's all going. But trying to stay on top of all those tax laws and accounting requirements, that's complex.
It's very complex, and in fact, it's very important to me when I go into, act as a part-time CFO or assist other CFOs in, shifting their business attention on forecasting. I absolutely look to form a solid relationship with tax CPAs and, and just general and doing reviews and audits and working with the bankers. It's just really important to get the experts who have that industry knowledge in relation to taxes and those things to make sure that the CEO has a complete team that he can rely on. And I just happen to be kind of in the middle of that because I'm pulling the data from all the different sources and reflecting that back to the CEO.
Yep, no, that's tremendous. What's some of the industries you've worked in here? Just briefly, what are some of the different things you've done?
It's kind of funny because manufacturing has always been a staple for me. I have a couple of good manufacturing clients. It's really what I cut my teeth on, and I love manufacturing.
Right.
But in Sacramento, again, I've done a lot of work with construction, and it's funny because and there's so many aspects of construction. There's land development, there's building houses, there's, I've even acquired a business and worked as a part-time CFO for a company that built cell towers. And, every single one of those is very, very different.
Right.
But then you get into the ag. I've been a part-time CFO for wineries. I've been on the wheelhouse of a gold dredge.
Right.
And, in every one of those situations, my mind just looks at those variables, the constraints, and starts calculating, but then really tries to, shift those calculations in predicting the future and what I can do to help, drive the future of that business.
So your comments are really good because they segue into my next question, which is you've written a book called Drive Your Business to Financial Success. And you've really condensed all the different experiences you've had in different industries, and you've brought them in this book because, again, at the very core, you're trying to make the business strong and successful by understanding how cash flow works in the business. So just give us maybe I've already done that for you, but just a bit of background to the book you've written, Drive Your Business to Financial Success. What was the motivation behind writing that book?
Well, really, the book tries to teach entrepreneurs just fundamental financial management. Then it really focuses on shifting their attention. Every CEO I've ever met knows, the importance of a financial statement and reading a financial statement. But then it really begins to shift the attention from historical being the emphasis in managing a business to really the forecast. And what I try to do is create that proactive financial management and business decision-making ability or function in that business, and it really becomes a cultural shift.
Right.
Our attempt is you can't change the past, but if you can predict the future, then you're much more adaptive to the future and changes. And so instead of being reactive, you're very much proactive.
And that's a huge distinction because too many business owners are reactive, and business is about the juice is making proactive and maximizing the opportunity you've got sitting there in front of
you. That's right. And the motivation really was, we just went through the worst recession in any of our lifetimes, my lifetime certainly.
Sure.
And as part of that, I really watched my clients. I had, a manufacturing client that was just in great difficulty, and they would ask me, are we going to survive this? And I would say, we're going through some tough times, but what I can see going forward is that, yes, you will survive. I had another client that, you know, was doing okay. And so we just kind of continued down the slow growth road that we were on. And then finally, I had another client that, frankly, we went from 2 million to 50 million in that 7-year time period, of which the recession was right in the middle. And if we had more than 5 monthly losses, I would be really surprised.
Right.
And I really relate that to our ability to anticipate and change the future. And so that was my greatest motivation. I just feel for business in general, but small businesses in particular that really, frankly, have just been beaten up in the last recession.
Right.
And I've developed methods to really help, you know, to assist CEOs in avoiding those situations.
That's powerful, that last example you gave, that you know, during the last 7 years of that business you were involved with, that you're able to manage that growth, because managing growth is equal to the problem of managing decline in sales. If you've got a radical change in the business, you've got to manage it either going down or going up.
That's right.
And so,
how do you do that?
you've got no choice. You've got to get it right, and that's
right.
what you're able to do. So, so that's fantastic. So, I haven't read every page of the book, but I like the analogy you've given of the book's about like driving a car and using your financial system to manage the company's profit, and just as importantly, its cash flow or its cash flow potential. So, take my words and make a little bit of sense of them. What's the essence of the book, and what are you trying to help the reader get from the book?
Well, first of all, you know, many of the CEOs that I've worked with over the years are very, very bright people, and a lot of their backgrounds are really more in engineering or sales or business development, not necessarily on the financial side. So I start out fairly basically, and it's not necessarily a new analogy. We all have talked about, you know, the financial statements in the rearview mirror.
Right.
But I've never really seen anybody say, how do you drive a car with just a rearview mirror and gauges on the dashboard, et cetera. We all talk about having these great financial dashboards, but nobody's ever really sat down and said, what would it be like to drive a car if you couldn't see through the windshield?
Right.
So that's really what we're trying to relate here. You see it even on the cover of the book, is it's almost more important to see through that windshield, which is the equivalent of forecasting, so we know where we're going. If the road turns left, you got to anticipate it turning left.
It
really begins to teach, you know, the anticipation. It's funny, I almost relate it to, you know, raising my kids and teaching them soccer, where, you know, by the time they reacted to a certain situation, the play was over. So you end up having to teach them how to anticipate.
Right.
And this is what it does for CEOs in a very short read. It's not intended to, you know, be a necessarily a bestseller
But I love the analogy. I mean, you know, we as a business broker, when I'm looking at financial statements, all they do is tell me what's happened historically. And I like the analogy you have of sitting in a car, you look in the rear vision mirror, you look at the financial statements, and you can see what's happening in the rear vision mirror. But that's not where the action is. The action is looking through the window and seeing what's coming up. And what you're offering to do is take the business to the next level by understanding that analogy and giving the tools to do that. I think it's fantastic.
And it works great in the short term in terms of, you know, looking at this year and the forecast for this year and really driving that profitability month to month. But it also is extremely important for those CEOs. And I know that in this day and age, and you probably see this in your business, Andrew, is that with so many baby boomers that are really ready to sell their businesses, you don't wake up one day and say it's for sale. You really need to begin to prepare for, you know, 3 years at least before that, so that you can maximize. You know, the cash flow and the profitability and truly maximize the enterprise value of that business.
Yep, that's exactly right.
And so our forecasting really works at that 3 to 5 year window as well.
So the forecast, and that's an important component of the book, is that you're putting this into a system, though. That's one thing I really like, the fact that you have a system. Maybe before you answer that question, let's take a break, because I'm going to run out of time otherwise. So you're on 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. I'm the host of the show, Andrew Rogerson. My guest is Mark Denning, and we're talking about making a business financially successful. We'll be back from break shortly.
Money 2.0 is sponsored by Rogerson Business Services.
Call Money 1055 at 866-576-1055 and get your questions answered in real time right now on Money 2.0.
Are you a business owner or entrepreneur at heart? I am too. I'm Andrew Rogerson, a local business broker and host of Money 2.0. Listen live Tuesdays at 10 on Money 105.5 FM. Let's talk about how you can successfully run your business.
Tune in to Money 2.0 with Andrew Rogerson, certified business broker and author of 4 books, Successfully Start Your Business, Buy Your Business, Buy Your Franchise, and Successfully Sell Your Business. Hear Andrew Rogerson on Money 2.0 live 10 a.m. Tuesdays right here on Money 105.5 FM.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, we are there. When the world looks for truth,
militants attack a natural gas facility.
Broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. And our web and social sites are among the most visited sites in our daily lives.
Who wants to bring you the video? Do not go outdoors here in Ocean City right now.
When important moments happen, both big and small, we're the first informers to history. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Money Experts, every morning at 10 on Money 2.0. Now, back to the host, Andrew Rogerson.
Welcome back, and thank you for listening to 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. I'm the host of your show, Andrew Rogerson, and my guest this morning is Mark Denning. And Mark's a CFO by training, and he's also the author of a book, Drive Your Business to Financial Success. And I'm having a really enjoyable conversation with Mark because we're talking about taking the financial statements, which are pretty boring, ugly things, and making some meaning out of them. So just before we went to break, I was talking to Mark about his book, and we're talking about the importance of looking through the window. We're using the analogy of driving a car, and we're talking about not using the rear vision mirror, but looking through the window and seeing where the direction of the company's going. And Mark's written this book on the basis of offering a system to business owners to look ahead and see where things are going. So Mark, just try and condense that idea you've got, that the book has you've written a system and you're trying to help business owners with that system. What is that all about?
So the system itself is really about building a financial model. And, you know, it takes the organization and financial formatting. It's understanding the underlying, as I've said before, variables and constraints and formulas. And, you know, there's everything from, you know, the financial loan covenants, which are constraints, to what availability do you have on a asset-based line of credit if the bank's offering you 80% on receivables and 50% on inventory and you have an eligibles. And, you know, the list just goes on and on and on. You know, what are your tax rates? If you're an S-Corp, do you need distributions? You know, what's the debt service that's required of the business? Because so many things that get lost in, you know, reading even a income statement or a cash flow statement, it's all the underlying elements that need to be part of the system or need to be modeled, not only understanding and verifying from a historical basis, but really being able to forecast those variables and constraints. And then really making sure that you understand the incremental inputs, which are what's in your backlog, what's in your pipeline, because that's where the true anticipation of the business comes from. Secondary to that is making sure you understand key business drivers and key financial drivers, because those are the things that you can change to really make the most positive impact on your business. And you know, some quick examples are, you know, what, you know, from a driver standpoint, how many phone calls does it take to get a lead? How many leads does it take to get a sale? You know, how long, what's the close period to close a deal? And these are all really non-financial drivers that, right, if you get those on your dashboard, yep, and you know how to drive your people and, you know, their decisions and their efforts towards, you know, what drops to profitability and cash flow, you really create this overall system that helps you manage people. And for larger organizations, it's really a way to then drop that system and those drivers and those motivational factors down to division managers, project managers, right. And really it becomes almost a cultural change.
Yes, that's one of the things I was getting as you were talking, that the financial dashboard not only helps the CFO, but once he gets comfortable with it and he starts sharing it with his people, now they're all heading in the same direction. So using the car analogy, guess what? They're all driving
that's
on
right.
the same road.
That's right. And really what there's a real dynamic shift going on in the world of accounting these days where the CFOs are really becoming more and more involved in the business from that standpoint.
Right.
And that's really, again, one of my greatest motivations is just, being part of that change and really helping businesses move forward and be part of that cultural shift.
So the books, it's a great little book. It's about 100 pages, so it's not a long read, which I think is great. How long do you think it takes somebody to learn the system you put together?
Well, essentially, the approach I take with small businesses is, it's really kind of a 60 to 90 day get in, understand the vibration of that business, work with the CEO to make sure, what's important, what are those business drivers, et cetera, what makes the most sense to be on the dashboard and really create a relationship with the outside CPA and the banker because those are critical to the success of that business. And so from a small business standpoint, it's really that 60, 90 days to create that part-time CFO relationship and then build the model. And then on a monthly basis, because most small businesses don't have access to CFO services, stay on board. I have clients that I've been working with for more than 10 years. Another one for 8 years just because I've established it, they rely on the data that
exactly.
I provide.
Yep. And they feel comfortable with who you are and what you're doing.
That's
so
right.
it's a good fit.
For larger businesses though, it's a little different too, because I've recently shifted away from Excel spreadsheets into an online system that really kind of begins to shift larger businesses away from, the typical budget to actuals, which budget to actuals are fine, holding people accountable, et cetera,
right.
But they're much, much less able to anticipate the day-to-day changes in a business. So we work with a lot of larger companies in helping their CFOs make that same cultural shift.
So you're talking about the online system. Is that proprietary to something you've put together? Or
no, it's actually a third-party company that I work with that I've, it gives me the ability to do all of my own modeling within that system,
right.
Just like I would with Excel, but it's much more robust and it's much more able to control and deliver and ultimately allow that CEO the ability to see their financial dashboard on their phone when they're sitting on the beach in Hawaii.
I love that. That's great. One of the chapters of the book talks about a road course or a race course. What are you meaning by that when you put that in there?
That chapter is actually preceded by the chapter that says, are you driving a cement truck or Ferrari? So it's really first understanding what your business is and how fast it moves. And just quickly, a manufacturing company with heavy capital investment is a cement truck, whereas a consulting firm that can move on the dime is a Ferrari. So you take those two analogies and you say, okay, do I want to grow fast or grow slow? And what's the feasibility of each one of those cars or vehicles on
right.
each one of those road courses?
Yep. Can you give us some examples? The book you've written, I'm sure, has been used by some of the clients you've worked with. Any clients come to mind that you feel comfortable sharing?
The first one I kind of already mentioned was the best example, is the $2 million software development company that was a little fledgling company when I got involved in. And the owner was very concerned about the future of the business. And one of the things that I immediately was able to help him do was, by rolling in the pipeline and having him understand, here's my, the people I have on board and here's the pipeline and the existing contracts I had. Okay, I'm good for 2 months.
Right.
So, he could start sleeping at night again.
Right.
And from there, he would say, all right, I got to fill the next hole. And it just became kind of that incremental.
Right.
Well, the next thing you know, we got it to the point where it was very stable. We brought in a couple of investors. And granted, these gentlemen were great business businessmen and entrepreneurs, they drove the business. But
sure.
what I was able to do was help them see
yes.
how to do that financially and then yep. make business decisions based on, you know, essentially what we saw and how fast we could expand and avoid the losses during that recession. So that's the best example.
And I like that example because I'm sure having the dashboard, now you've got the owner that's understood the dashboard and he's got his direction. If he's bringing the investors who have their own skill set and their own mindset and they're concerned about their investment, they want to be part of what's they want to be part of the discussions, part of the decision
that's
making.
Right.
So the dashboard helps everyone align that and be heading in the same direction.
Yeah, and the banks too, because it creates great confidence in the bank.
Yeah.
When you walk into a banker and you show them, you know, this is what we said we were going to do last year. This is what we did. We beat the numbers. This is what we're going to do this year. If you can establish that kind of rhythm with your banker,
yep.
they absolutely love you.
Yep. No, that's very good. We're close to running out of time, so I wonder, where's the book available? Can if somebody wants to buy the book, where's the place to get that from?
I basically sell it off my website, which okay. is at www.realtimecfos, with an S at the end there, .com. And you can log on to that website and click on the book, and it'll take you to the publisher, and you can order it online.
Okay. If you're listening, you got questions for Mark, I want to quickly throw out his phone number because you know he's more than happy to have a conversation with you. His phone number is 916-761-6385. I'll give that again, 916-761-6385. And the website, www.real, R-E-A-L, real-time CFOs with an S on the end, .com. And that's Mark's website. Mark, we've got to wrap it up there. The music's playing, so it tells me that my show is done for this week. Mark, thanks for being a guest this morning. Great having you.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to 105.5 FM and Money 2.0. I'm Andrew Rogerson, and we'll talk to you next week.